if you want to be a guest, please email me. I have received so many emails of people that are excited and passionate about being a guest on this show. The process is time consuming. I go through about an hour long pre-interview and I determine where you'd fit best in the season. So if you've gone through the pre-interview process, or we've messaged back and forth via email and haven't gone through the pre-interview process, I'm not ignoring you. I promise. There's just a lot on my plate and I am one person. So that being said, I look forward to talking with every one of you that is interested in being on this podcast. Y'all are amazing and I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much.
It was all very picture perfect at the beginning. Yeah. And I have been trained to be a mom. I have taken the classes. I'm ready for this. It just didn't work out like that for me. We were married 5 years and he had an affair, got his mistress pregnant. And I lost it. I lost my mind for several years. Because that was supposed to be me. Yeah, so she got pregnant, lost a baby. They were still together. And then she got pregnant again and we got divorced after that. And so I had to go through it twice. First pregnancy, 6 weeks later, she loses her baby, or 8 weeks later, I can't remember. And then she's pregnant again and we still haven't even had a chance to get divorced yet in the chaos of everything. And so that affair like broke me. It turned me into a different person. Because I knew that I didn't do anything wrong with that one. I knew I did the right thing, but why on earth would God let this happen to me when I did the right thing?
Welcome to the Focus on Your Own Family podcast. Fundamentalist evangelicalism impacted a generation. We survived physical, psychological, mental, and spiritual abuse. We survived the Focus on the Family movement, and we want to talk about it. Trigger warning, guests will be sharing stories of domestic violence, child abuse, and animal abuse. Please listen with caution. Thank you. This is Jenny. Here is her story. Hey, Jenny, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am good. I met you through a mutual friend, and yeah. I'm so thankful that I did, because just the little bit that we've talked, honestly, you've encouraged me, and I know that sounds evangelical, so I apologize, but you have. Just the first time that we started texting, the little bit that you had said to me, it meant a lot, and how challenging it is to be a woman on the outside of this, because being raised in the way that we were raised with, hey, your job is to be a wife and a mom. And then now here we are, we're outside of it. We're having to make up for decades. Oh, yeah. Of time when we were, all of our friends outside of this are, they're in the corporate world, they're doing these things. And here we are, we're like, I can do the dishes and right. I can change a diaper. Yay.
That's real good.
Yeah, exactly. I can get those lines in the carpet.
For real.
I appreciate you. You immediately struck me as a person that advocates for not just your own rights and your family's rights, because we're going to get into that, but the rights of women and just anybody that you come across. So thank you. And I look forward to doing this podcast with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to get right into it. And what does Focus on the Family, True Love Waits, Adventures in Odyssey, when I say those things, what did that mean to you growing up? Was there a significance in that? Yeah. Tell me if those played a role in your life.
Adventures in Odyssey. That and VeggieTales is what I was allowed to watch and listen to.
Yes.
For a lot of my childhood. True Love Waits. Man, that messed me up a little bit. Purity culture. Now as an adult, I can look back and look at purity culture and True Love Waits and be like, man, that was really messed up. Like the whole thing.
Yeah.
So both were significant to me. I grew up in IBLP with the Bill Gothard group, not as much with the James Dobson group. So I feel like IBLP took like conservatism to a whole different level. Adventures in Odyssey and VeggieTales were like it, and that was like pushing it. Like, yeah. They weren't technically IBLP. And so, and then True Love Waits for IBLP was just courtship. I don't really think that we called it True Love Waits. I think it was just like, when the time comes, you'll court someone. I did get a purity ring from my stepdad. I was like 15. I think my sister was like 12 or 13. It was really weird. It was almost like a proposal, but not. It was on my sister's birthday at my aunt and uncle's house. And it was weird. The whole thing was weird. I mean, just saying it out loud, I'm like, man, that's really weird.
I think sometimes I think not having this on film does such a disservice because I have so many, I can't control my face with reactions sometimes. Yeah,
the weirdest faces.
I think, so, oh my gosh, you know that you grew up the way that we grew up when we're like, oh, purity ring. Like, it's just...
That makes no sense.
But if you don't mind going into detail about that, yeah. As we know, there was like a whole pledge.
Yeah.
Was it like a ceremony?
It wasn't really like a whole ceremony. It was more, we have something for you. We would like for you to, I don't think we signed anything officially like a pledge, but we said it. I'm going to save myself from my future spouse. I'm not going to have sex before marriage. And then I'm taking this purity ring as a symbol of that. We wore it on our left ring finger. Then, like, the IBLP courtship definitely took it to a different level where we weren't allowed to date anybody unless they went through, got permission to speak to us through our stepdad and through our mom. Not really as much my mom, but, and my real dad lived in a different city at the time, so he wasn't around as often. It was all very wedding-ish, but it wasn't a purity ball. We didn't do that. We were just in our normal clothes when my stepdad gave us the little rings and was like, do you commit to this courtship process and having any young man ask for permission to you? But at that time, I was 15, and honestly, I wasn't even allowed to have male friends. And so mm-hmm. I know that other friends of mine who had done True Love Waits, they could have guy friends. They just couldn't like date them until a certain age or something like that. But we didn't even really have guy friends by the time I was in my older teens. There was like nobody around to really ask for my hand in courtship. So it just wasn't really a possibility at that point. And so as I got older, I religiously wore the ring. I never took it off. Like, I was very serious about it. And because I thought this is the way to do it. I'm not going to date these guys. I truly thought that dating was going to prepare me for divorce. And that's what was like beaten into my head, basically, is if you date and then you break up, obviously, everybody has different analogies, but you're going to give a piece of your heart away to that person. And then by the time you meet the person you're supposed to marry, then you have nothing left for them. And so I took it really seriously. I'm like, I have to have my whole heart for whoever I'm going to marry. It's very serious. Now I'm like, I feel like I'm going to be okay.
When we were talking about it yesterday in our pre-interview, I was telling you how I would tell guys at parties mm-hmm. that I'm saving myself for marriage. And it's laughable and so deeply tragic because I remember being 11 and thinking about getting married. Oh, I can't wait to get married, when my other friends are like listening to Ace of Base and doing fun things. There's soccer tournaments, doing dance classes and all of these things. I'm thinking about how I can't wait to get married.
I think my story is a little bit different because I grew up in public school until I was in fourth grade. And then I was in private school for fifth grade and then homeschooled through IBLP for pretty much the rest. So it was a huge contrast between one day I'm in public school, the next day I'm in private school, the next day I'm like homeschooling. And then we joined the IBLP whenever I was like 12. I had years before that where it was like normal life.
So, I don't know if that
makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I was not homeschooled. I was in public school up until eighth grade. And then I was homeschooled for only like a blink, really. Right. It was just a little bit. And then back into public school for a few years. And then I was put in private school. But this private school was more like, the best way I can describe it is we would go to a place for some classes and then come home. Yeah. But at that time I was driving, so I was the one that transported myself, but it was a private school. However, if I was not at home, I was at youth group or Awana's, or there was always something religious that I was involved in, like a prayer meeting or that sort of thing. So I had a foot in public school and then a foot in the deeply cultish, religious, homeschool type of environment. So I never quite felt like I fit in because I knew too much secular knowledge and I knew too much non-secular knowledge and just enough of both that I was so weird.
Yeah, I can relate to that because we were totally dedicated to homeschooling, but I had one foot in IBLP, ultra conservative, and then one foot in your world with Awana's.
Yeah.
It varied because sometimes we could go to youth group and Awana's, but then sometimes we couldn't. And there was no balance with it. So like for months we would go to youth group at the local Baptist church that my grandparents went to, but then be like, okay, we can't do that anymore. And then we're back to IBLP. And then a few months later we would go to Awana's and then we're back to IBLP. So it was like, it was very strange. It was a little bit confusing. And then as I got older, like I was able to do figure skating as like a sport.
Gym. As yeah, a gym.
Gym. And so one minute I would be in my long jean skirts with the IBLP people. And the next minute I would be in my little ice skating outfit skating to Will Smith. And then the next minute I'm back in my jean skirt and I'm like, this is the most bizarre mind switch, which is what we were talking about the other day, is I just became a chameleon. I would just adapt to whatever environment I was in because I had to. And I don't think my parents meant anything bad by it because my parents were incredibly young while they were doing this. I didn't think about this till the other day, but they were like in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s when they joined IBLP. And I was like, I cannot imagine being 29 years old. Joining a cult with five kids.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you to those that have reached out with your support. Whether you have left a review, if you haven't left a review, this would be a really, really good time to leave a review. Read every single one of them. So thank you. And for those that are subscribers to my Patreon, thank you. It means so much. One of the new features that I am adding for my paid Patreon subscribers is the chat feature. And this is just a way that we can all continue this conversation that we're having in the podcast. And if you are not a paid subscriber, unfortunately, the chat feature won't be available to you, but you can be a free subscriber and you'll just get the weekly newsletters. Y'all are amazing. And I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much. That's so interesting that you say that, because when my parents got married, they were Catholic. And then they had my sister and then my brother. And then they got into the deep conservative Christian nationalist Dobson / Gothard ideology. And it grew over time. It wasn't
ours.
Exactly. Because my brother and sister were raised with different parents. They had the same parents, right? But there's a 5-6 year gap. I'm the youngest. Yeah. So the way that they were raised was quite different. I want to circle back though to ice skating.
Yeah.
Because I also did ice skating. What? Was it like a, fundy thing? Like fundy figure skating?
No, I wasn't a fundy figure skater. I wore the little short skirts and the little tights and everything.
Oh, yeah, see, random. I wasn't allowed to. I wore dresses for a long time, but I really liked that. I really liked like Little House on the Prairie. And
oh my gosh.
I wanted to wear the pinafore so bad. I had an active imagination. So I consistently would imagine being in that time where I'm taking care of my husband and kids. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I wore dresses like that a lot until like fifth grade. And then it was jeans and stuff. And I didn't, that was never a problem as long as it was, as long as I was conservative with my outfits, pants were fine.
Yeah. I think that,
but I do find that interesting.
It was different just because it was like, it was very back and forth. I would go to figure skating and wear the little figure skating outfits, but then I had to make sure I had like jean skirts with me in case we ever went to a fundy event afterwards or something like that. And I have this story of my mom is probably going to kill me for telling this story. We were at an amusement park and I decided that day to wear khaki cargo pants to the amusement park. My mom was like, okay, it's going to be fine. I was probably like 16. It's going to be fine. And we ran into a fundy family. And I had a skirt with me and I had to change into the skirt because we ran into the fundy family. That's how strong the grip was. Like we were freaking out because we ran into this family at an amusement park and I'm literally wearing baggy pants and a baggy t-shirt. And we're like, oh my gosh, I got to change because we ran into this family and they're going to see me in pants because we all wore skirts. Like that was it. Long skirts past your knees. And now we can have a good laugh about it. But then it was like a big deal. Like we cannot have these people seeing us in pants. So,
well, I'm glad that you bring that up because my mom did the same thing. So here, like where I grew up, I had to dress a certain way, talk a certain way. My freedom was so limited in everything that I did. However, when we would go on vacation, I have a picture where I have a full crop top on and shorts. And I look at that and I ask my mom about it. And she said, well, yeah, you couldn't wear that back at home because I didn't want people to get thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, that doesn't make any sense because like I've got a full crop top and shorts on.
Yeah, but- like we lived out by the lake and we have pictures of us on the boat, we had a little boat and we'd be in our bathing suits. But I think it was just, and let me backtrack a little bit because I don't think I've talked about this at all, but I grew up with the Duggar family at their church in their little trailer church with them. I was older than a lot of them by a few years. I was like one of the older ones. But so we would see them everywhere. We were all living in the same area. So if we saw them and we weren't in skirts, it was like, oh my gosh, they know that we wear pants, which I'm sure they already knew that. Anyway, we were fooling. But we lived out on the lake, which was like a half hour from where they lived in Springdale when we were all younger. And so we would just be out on our boat in our bathing suits because we're like, we're not going to see them. We never did out on the lake. But then we would go to different events in town because we all homeschooled. We would all be at the same homeschool events. We helped with campaign events with them. I was their campaign nanny for 2 summers. So like those summers and those jean skirts were hella hot. Long jean skirts, but it was just this dual world that we lived in where like you, we could wear the shorts and the crop tops, but then we would go to certain events and we're like, we have to wear these dresses at these events. It was very strange. And now my family, we're all out and we can look back and be like, what on earth are we doing? What on earth did we do? Yeah, it was very strange. It was a very strange dual world.
Yeah. And I like how you brought up that you were chameleon because that's very much what I was as well. I think that I really don't know what it was that was going on in the mind of my mom or in the mind of my dad, to be honest with you. I try to make sense of it. And it just felt like this really weird power and control dynamic that Okay. If you're in that area, you again have to wear this, talk like this, act like this. But when we're here, because we're secluded, you are allowed to do anything. And could it be that I didn't have access to anybody other than my family, and that's why it was okay? That's a possibility.
Yeah.
Or there could be something else. I'm not sure. What I do know is I have a mixture of me in a prairie dress, and then all of a sudden flash forward 2 months and I'm in a crop top and short shorts out in public. Granted, this is also a town of one. So I'm sure there was nobody around. I'm like parading myself, obviously, in the middle of town in a crop top. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that just did not add up that caused me to have this ability to be in any environment and know how to adapt immediately to it. Like, I know exactly what my expectation is from this person. I know who the safe people are, who the not safe people are, and I know what vernacular I'm to use in this moment, which, yes, is helpful. And it's a trauma response.
Yeah.
We learned how to navigate some pretty back and forth situations a lot growing up. I'd love to hear more, if you're willing, to talk about what life was like. What was the average day like? You've got the True Love Waits ring on, which, by the way, hold on a second. I looked up one of the pledges. That's what I was doing. So may I read it?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. This is a challenge to abstinence and faithfulness. The True Love Waits card reads, believing that true love waits, I make a commitment to God, myself, my family, my country, my friends, my future mate, and my future children to be sexually pure until the day I give myself only to my marriage partner in a covenant marriage relationship. Why the country?
I was just about to say that. What does the country have to do?
That is when you know it's Christian nationalism. 100%. What? To my country?
Mm-mm. I'm not pledging anything to my country. Not like that. Not with my sexuality. No, thank you. That's crazy.
It's like redoing the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm believing that true love waits. I make a commitment to God.
She had a hand over her heart, by the way.
I definitely had my hand over my heart.
Over your heart.
God and to country. It's so epic. Like, it needs the Braveheart music behind it or something.
That's crazy. I don't think that I signed that card. I would remember that. Because I would have kept it with me. I would have had it with me with my ring and everything.
There's a different variation, but all of it says country on it.
Yeah.
And then, yes, there is a space to sign.
Yeah. Think of it this way. Josh Harris's book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, was too liberal for our group. We weren't allowed to read that because it suggested dating ideas. Even though he kissed dating goodbye and he renounced his own book at this point. But that idea was too liberal for our group. There was to be no male-female contact until you were ready to court someone. So you didn't even know who you were going to be courting. So I had a situation whenever I was like 17 or 18. There was a guy, I must have been 18 because the guy was a year younger than me, who he wanted to court me. I knew him decently well because our parents were all pretty good friends. So, and then he had a sister who was my age. So we all knew each other. And his dad went to my stepdad and was like, hey, my son's interested in Jen. What do you think? And by that point, I was like edging out of the church. There had been some really traumatic situations happen within the church that the Duggars went to. The church had just found out about, I was 17, almost 18 when we found out about things that Josh was doing, and it just devastated all of us. And so by the time I was 18, I was weeding myself out because I was just like, I can't be around this. This is too much. This guy is saying, I'm interested in Jen. I want to court Jen. But the dad was saying, I want to keep everything between the dads. We don't want them to really talk to each other until they know that they want to get to know each other. And my stepdad was like, Jen is absolutely not doing that. So I'm like, thanks to my stepdad for saving me from a situation that could have been bad. And I know this guy now as an adult, and he's a good friend of mine, but we both are like, it would have been a disaster. It would have been heartbreaking for us if we would have gone through that, because he's on a completely different road than I am. And it's just, we just weren't the right people for each other. But for that dad to truly believe that the right thing to do was to keep all the communication between the dads, thank God my stepdad knew me well enough to be like, I'm sorry, this girl's not going to go for that. And he knew that I was edging myself out of the IBLP at that point anyways, because we kept fighting about it. They didn't want me to leave. I wanted to leave. But then we had found out about the stuff going on with the Duggars. And at that point, my family did start leaving a little bit. They ended up going back and then leaving again. But it was just a tough time for everybody who was involved in their church. But back to your question about like my day-to-day life with my career.
Yeah. So
my mom and my stepdad fully bought into the Quiverful movement, which now I'm thankful for because I have a lot of cool siblings. So I'm the oldest of 8 total kids. I have my sister and I, who we are full siblings. And then my biological dad has a daughter who is, I say she's my half sister, but she's like my twin. She's my sister. Mm-hmm. And then my mom and my stepdad had 5 more. So my mom, she was pregnant a lot. She and Michelle Duggar had joint baby showers for one of their daughters and one of my sisters. Like they were in it together mm-hmm. with all their babies. Mm-hmm. So I think that at the time, my mom and my stepdad bought into the older kids help raise the younger kids. And they're like, wow, this is convenient because we have these 2 older daughters who I was 11 when my 3rd sister was born. And they're like, they can help us out with all these kids. So my sister and I did a lot of helping with my siblings. Like we would wake up with them. Sometimes they would be sleeping with us. Most of the time they just had their own cribs and would be with my mom and my stepdad. But I mean, some of the times they would be with us in our bed. We would wake up with them. We would help feed them. We would play with them and then do our homeschooling. But our stepdad got into this thing where he wanted us all to be up at 5 in the morning and do like a family workout together and then do Bible time. And now we give him so much crap for it. 'Cause we're like, why? You went to work. We just went back to bed. And so, but he was really into it. Like we would wake up and do our little exercises. We had a home gym and then we would do our Bible time with him, Duggar style, with him teaching all of us in through the wisdom booklets and through the ATI curriculum and the Bible time that they did through that curriculum. And then he would leave for work and we would all go back to bed like every day. And usually we would get back up at like 7:30 or 8 and start on our school and stuff. We would just like lay around for an hour or so because we're like, we're tired. You made us work out and then didn't like an hour of Bible time. Like we're tired now. So
go ahead. I have a question.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you were in public school.
Yes.
For a large chunk.
Yeah.
Of your, I mean, from what I'm guessing, what, K through 5?
So K at through least? 4 and then part of 5.
Okay.
One of my siblings was born and my mom was super sick. So part of 5th grade, I was in private school and part of it, I was homeschooled. So,
okay. So you go from having freedom.
Yeah.
To all of a sudden this ideology where now you have to help raise your younger siblings. There's this buddy system sort of thing. If you don't mind talking to me about that, because that's a significant change in your life.
Yeah.
What was that like? Walk me through what that was like to, like, how did you rationalize that? So was it more spiritual bypassing? This is what God wants, so this is what we're going to do? Or
no, I
what
think
was that like?
For me, it was very gradual. It was very gradual. Like when we started homeschooling, the first year wasn't IBLP homeschooling. It was like fun. And we got to spend more time with our mom because she had been working and we had been in public school and we did all these cool activities. And then we met the IBLP families and they introduced us to this whole world. I was like 11, 12-ish. So by the time, so between the ages of 10 and 12, it was like a gradual thing. And I was 11 when my third sister was born. And obviously as an 11-year-old, I don't know that my parents are going to have five more kids after this. And I was obsessed with my baby sister. Like I loved that kid. So for me at the beginning, I was like, I'm cool with this. This is cool. I have this baby sister. She was super fat. She was really cute. But then as I got older, my brother was born and he was much different than us older three girls. Us three girls were pretty chill. We didn't really cry a lot. We didn't whine about a lot, but we always give him a hard time and say that he was like nuts compared to us because he was just a very high energy kid. By the time I was like 14, 15, I started getting a little bit resentful because I was just doing so much. And I saw like my cousins and other kids that I knew going to dances and doing teenagery things that I wasn't doing. And then they would see me just babysitting all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and I had neighbor friends and I did things outside of babysitting, but that's how the other kids saw it, is, oh, you're just babysitting all the time. And they would tell me that. And then I would be like, man, that kind of stinks. I want to be doing other things with you guys, but I got to stay here with my little sister and my brother who I love and who I'm glad are here. So it was a double-edged sword a little bit. Cause I'm like, I love these kids. I'm obsessed with them. They bring me so much joy, but then I just wanted to be doing teenager things too. So that was where it went back and forth a little bit. Cause I started voicing that and my sister started voicing that. So then they were like, okay, then I guess you guys can go to youth group at this church. And then they would pull it back. And I never really knew what the reasoning was. I think it was IBLP influence on my mom and my stepdad. Like, they shouldn't be doing this. They can't have outside influences. So they would pull us back from other church activities. And then we would go back to IBLP stuff. So I think as I got older, it bothered me that I was having to help raise these siblings. And I would see my parents try to correct it, but then get sucked back into the IBLP thing too. And then by the time I was 18, I had one of my little sisters was born and was special needs. So as I'm leaving the IBLP, I have my sister who's born with a heart issue. She has open heart surgery at 6 weeks. I'm 18 years old. I'm trying to figure out if I want to go to college or not. But my mom and my stepdad have to be with her in Little Rock at the hospital. So I take on the role as mom for a year. I was mom and was doing soccer practice and homeschool group with my other siblings and taking them places. So by the time I was like 19, I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I love you guys, but I can't keep doing this. I have to figure out what I'm going to do next. And that led to a whole new slew of things later on.
Yeah. Yeah.
To answer your question, though, it's like a mixed bag for me because I loved my siblings, but I could tell that there were times where I was like, I don't really want to be raising these kids as a kid. And then if my parents would listen, they would try to do something. But the IBLP teachings really taught that you could not have any outside influences at all other than the people in your IBLP church. So they would just get sucked into that and we would be back where we started. So it's cult.
Yeah.
It's a cult. And that's what cults do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that our parents in some way knew that. I know that yours were IBLP, mine were Dobson. I did have IBLP stuff. I did not know that until I saw Shiny Happy People. Mm. And my childhood best friend and I, we were
I had seen, I watched it when it came out and I had texted her and I said, hey, this just came out. It's how we grew up. I remember some stuff.
Yeah.
And she was more homeschooled. And so I've thought, okay, maybe she'll remember some more things. And she started watching it. And within 5 minutes of her watching, my phone was blowing up with, oh my gosh, there's this and this. And then the next day she sent me a message and she's, okay, I took down some notes when I was watching it. And she sent me some pictures of stuff. She's, this was like, this is what we had in our house growing up. And she sent me a picture and it was of the character, like the character trait. Anyway, it had the bear.
Book or was it a picture?
It was like the character sketches.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I messaged her back and I said, her name is Julie. And I said, Julie, I really thought that was Encyclopedia Britannica. I thought we were the cool people. Yeah. I'm just now realizing that we weren't. Like I thought, because the cool families had Encyclopedia Britannica. Nope. That was definitely ATI. And there was just other things that would come up too.
Like we were considered a cool family because my stepdad was a graphic designer and we had those big MacBook, those old school MacBook computers but they had no internet on them, but they had one dinosaur game that we could all play. We thought we were the coolest family in the world.
Yeah, I could play, gosh, growing up, I played Oregon Trail. I had there was a typing game called Mario Teaches Typing and I had Mario Teaches Typing and there were things again, that is what's so interesting about growing up this way is there's just enough to keep you relevant so that people weren't like, what's going on? So that our parents, at least my parents, could rationalize it's not a cult.
Yeah.
Because look, they're still having fun. Mm-hmm. And they're not secluded. They're still in the world, but they're not of the world. And yeah. But what that does, at least for me, is again, it emphasized the need to constantly be a chameleon. And for me, something that was okay would be taken away.
Yeah.
And could be taken away depending on what Dobson material was put out. So for you, it would be Gothard. Mm-hmm. And I just remember loving something and then having it being taken away because it has subliminal messaging of Satan in it somehow.
Like Barbies for us, like my sister and I, when we were younger, were obsessed with Barbies. Like even the first year or two when we were homeschooled, we knew that if my mom got on the phone with certain friends, we would have an half an hour to an hour and we would run to our rooms and go play Barbies instead of doing our school. But then those were taken away for a while. And that was something for me. I'm like, man, that's a part of my childhood. I loved my Barbies. My sister loved her Barbies. And Gothard kids don't play with Barbies because you can basically see a naked body of a woman. Mm-hmm. And that's not allowed. And so... Gothard also has something about Cabbage Patch Kids being demonic, but I don't really know what that is about because we didn't.
That was also with Dobson. Mm-hmm. However, for some strange reason, we were allowed to keep our Cabbage Patch dolls because my sister and I both had one.
Yeah.
And then I was also allowed to keep my Care Bears because I had a Care Bear doll and my sister had a Care Bear. Mm-hmm. But those two, specifically the Cabbage Patch dolls, there was something about there's a mark, like they have a mark or something on them. And that was supposedly demonic in nature. I don't completely understand. I'd need to do more research on that, but I do remember that being a thing at the time because my childhood best friend could not have one.
Yeah.
And I could.
I think now I look back and I'm like, man, okay, that's fine if Cabbage Patch dolls have a mark on them, but what about the people who are abusing people within this church? Like, why are you? I know that's a stark difference. It's harsh, but it's
no. But I think it paints a picture. They made these things that were not that big of a deal. Right. They gave parents something to fear, so that they could basically like wave that shiny object in front of them and say, this is what you should be fearing. Do you see what the world is doing?
Yeah.
We're doing it right.
Yeah.
They're doing it wrong. And so they constantly keep them distracted from what the real problem is. And I know it's said a lot in this community, in this space, but the call's coming from the inside.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people that I grew up with in the IBLP who, man, they have tough lives now. Like, some people are thriving pretty well, but they've had to break out and do their own thing. I just found out that there's a girl that I know who was really an IBLP. Like, she was one of the Gothard girls, and she's a doctor now in Texas. And I'm like, good job. Mm-hmm. Girl. Like, we don't talk to each other anymore, but I found out through like the social grapevine. I'm like, good job. Like, you're a doctor now. Like, that's amazing. But so many of these women, they don't even know how to get a job, man. It's tough. I wouldn't know how. I wouldn't know how to do all of what I'm doing in my life if it just weren't for sheer grit and having to do it. I was in positions in my life where I had no choice. I had to get a job. But it's tough because I'm just like, the Cabbage Patch thing or taking away the Barbies or whatever seems so small when you have people who can't survive. You're not teaching them how to survive. You're not teaching them how to, even men in the IBLP, I don't know what Dobson teaches, but with men in the IBLP, they're taught to work for themselves and not go to college unless you want to be a lawyer or a doctor or something specialized. And that's what God specifically calls you to do. So you have these guys who truly don't know how to work, and then they develop no work ethic, and then they just don't work. But then they're expected to support a quiverful family. Like, how the hell are you supposed to do that? I don't know. I'm very passionate about
this. For Dobson, it was just emphasized that the man is the head. Mm-hmm. And that the man is the one that provides.
Yes.
However, as society evolved, so did the rhetoric. Like, the language needed to change and shift a little bit so that it didn't look, because they wanted to infiltrate mainstream as much as they could. So it always had to look like we're in the world, but not of the world. Okay. Whereas, from my perspective and my understanding, Gothard was extreme. Yeah. Gothard was extreme, whereas Dobson was extreme, hidden under some, it looked like nursery school in comparison to what Gothard was doing. However, it was very sneaky.
With Gothard, it was like, you're not part of the world at all. Like, you don't be part of the world. If you want to go,
you're set aside.
You go to certain colleges but that is only if you want to do something very specific. Even for me to go to community college, it was encouraged for me to go to community college and only take classes that I could use those classes to stay home and be a wife and mother. Everything went back to, you're going to be a wife and you're going to be a mom. And I truly believed that. And even when I left the IBLP, I believed that was what I was going to do. I believe that's what I was called to do, because I left IBLP and just went into Southern Baptist Church. Probably not a huge,
like, IFB or SBC?
SBC. And there's probably not like a huge difference, but to me it was like, whoa, this is a huge difference between the two.
And right. So you went more from Gothard to Dobson.
I started going to First Baptist Church in our area, which is the Southern Baptist Convention Church. And so I fully believe I'm going to be a wife and a mom, and I don't really care what my career is. I don't really need a career, but I feel like I need to go to college because it's the thing that I need to do right now. So even in, I didn't do courting, but even in dating, like, my first boyfriend, he was a pretty well-off guy. So I was like, okay, if I marry this guy, he's going to be the provider. I'll stay home with the kids. And it is what it is. I fully believed that.
Yeah.
Now looking back, I was like 19 and I know nothing, but I don't think I knew anything when we were 19.
No, I mean, I got engaged at 19 and married at 20. But no, I did. I definitely had no idea. Neither did my husband. I think that we did enough. I think that because I had been parentified from day one, because that's how it is when you're in this, I the only way to really explain it is that growing up inside of this fundamentalist space, when we're born, we're seen as adults. We're punished as adults, even though we're in tiny little human bodies. Yeah. We are expected to understand, comprehend, rationalize everything as adults. So I had been placed in an adult space from such a young age. We're talking about chastity and sex when we're 9 and 10. By the time I'm 18, 19, I had been conditioned to believe like I'm already past my point. When I'm 16, 15 years old, I have a journal entry where I am, quote, crying out to the Lord. Mm-hmm. I say that fully in air quotes, where I'm saying, I don't know who I'm going to marry.
Yeah.
What have I done, Lord, that I do not have somebody for the rest of my life yet? What have I done? I'm 15.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that for me, I was in the same position where I was considered an adult super young. Whenever I was 12, I'm sitting with the moms who are all nursing their babies. Like, they're talking to them about parent stuff. Oh, yeah, my mom was super sick when she was pregnant. She ate crackers for weeks. And, like, I knew all the lingo. And from then on, all of these moms in our church are having kids all at the same time. Multiple, every year they're having a kid at the same time. And because I was one of the older ones, I'm there for all of it. I'm there for their pregnancy announcements. I'm there when they're having babies. I'm there when they're nursing babies. I'm holding all these babies. And then they wonder when I become an adult why I don't want to have babies. Like, I've literally been around 40 of them. So yeah, it was definitely, I don't know what you called it, parentifying. Is that what you called it?
Yeah.
So just tiny adults. I'm 12, 13 years old, knowing that so-and-so just had a baby and they got to nurse them in the back room.
Yeah. Yep.
It's crazy.
It is. It's pretty wild. All right. You graduate, you're out of school.
Yep.
And I would love to know, because there's the early part of your life there, and then there's teenage, there's true love waits. Mm-hmm. But I'd say like your hardest thing yet was yet to come, right? Oh, wow. So I've heard you mention a couple times your ex-husband.
Yeah. Oh, my ex. He's crazy.
So you're like, oh. Okay. If I'd love to hear from 20 on. Yeah. And then what your relationship is like with those still either in the IBLP, and that's like later on down the road we can talk about, but what is life from 20 to now? How has it impacted your life?
Yeah. My first boyfriend, he worked for a large corporation in our town and he cheated on me with an intern. So I broke up with him. That was a whole new world for me, like experiencing. I decided not to court. I dated, met him. We were together for about a year and a half. We broke up once because my parents didn't like him. And then
did that, like when he cheated on you with your IBLP upbringing, did you have those voices in your head saying, had I courted, maybe this wouldn't have happened?
Yeah. Because I ditched true love waits. I ditched my purity ring. I just was like, I'm going to do whatever I want to, because I had seen so many bad things happen in our IBLP church. I was like, it probably doesn't matter what I do at this point. And so I just did whatever I wanted to. And so whenever he cheated on me, I was like, man, if I would have done better, if I would have saved myself, if I would have not necessarily courted, but at least waited, or I don't know. It was a lot of guilt, a lot of shame that honestly came from me, but it also came from people within the IBLP church that my parents were still attending, and those people were still in my life. And these people were in their 30s and 40s, taking me aside into their master bedroom, husband and wife, saying, you can't be having sex before marriage, Jen. You're an example to all these kids. 45 kids that I'm supposed to be a sole example to, like, those kids are going to figure it out on their own. And so when those different conversations would happen, I just had to cut it off because I'm like, I'm still going to just do what I want to do. So then when the cheating happened, I was like, man, I could have done better. But in all reality, it was just lessons that I had to learn. And now, after a lot of therapy and growing up, I know that he made those decisions and I moved on with my life. And so then soon after that, I met my ex-husband. And we dated, so with my ex, he came from not an IBLP family, but a very conservative Christian family in our hometown. But they seemed to have a white picket life. It was like the mom had her job, the dad was in civic duty job, they had two kids, they had a dog, they lived in the same house. It was very stable. And me coming from lots of unstable, that attracted me to them and to their family. They were all very close. We dated and were married within a year. I'm just true love wait style. And so for me, I was like, this is it. This is it for me. Like we tried to do everything the right way. Nobody's ever perfect. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, we did things the best way we knew how. We involved our families. We had two pastors at our wedding. Like his pastor and my pastor were like, surely that's gonna make it last.
Yeah. The more pastors, the better. That's what I never say.
It was all very picture perfect at the beginning. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm ready. I have been trained to be a mom. I have taken the classes. I'm ready for this. And it just didn't work out like that for me. We were married 5 years and he had an affair and got his mistress pregnant. And I lost it. I lost my mind for several years. Because that was supposed to be me. Yeah. So she got pregnant, lost a baby. They were still together. And then she got pregnant again and we got divorced after that. And so I had to go through it twice. First pregnancy, 6 weeks later, she loses her baby, or 8 weeks later, I can't remember. And then she's pregnant again. And we're still haven't even had a chance to get divorced yet in the chaos of everything. And so that affair like broke me. It turned me into a different person because I knew that I didn't do anything wrong with that one. I knew I did the right thing, but why on earth would God let this happen to me when I did the right thing? Like when I found out that she was pregnant, like I'm actually writing a book about all of this. And in my book, there's one part that hits me because I was living in my parents' spare room at that point because we were planting a church on the East Coast and we moved back to Northwest Arkansas. And he was having this affair with this girl he went to high school with in Northwest Arkansas. And I was living in my parents' garage and I could not get up off of that garage floor for days because I was like, why did I not have this kid? Like, why did I not get this life that I thought I was supposed to have? And now this random girl who my husband's having an affair with gets pregnant and there's no remorse and they're excited and they're happy. He was embarrassed, but she's excited and happy putting his last name as hashtags on her social media while we haven't even filed for divorce yet. We're flat broke. We just planted a church. Like we have no money and you are already planning a life with this guy. And I was like, I'm way far behind then. I don't know. And so that was the beginning of me really hunkering down and being like, okay, I think some of the stuff that I am trying to do isn't what's right for me. I was still in church at that point. It was a pretty loose, non-denominational, more liberal non-denominational church in our area, but it was the one that he and I had attended together. And so there would be times at that church that people would forget that we got divorced and they would hug me asking how we were. And I'm like, y'all aren't paying attention to this is a huge deal. He and I had 400 mutual friends on social media who all had to watch this thing play out. And so it's okay, if they're not paying attention in the church, then who is? who is paying attention to the hard shit that's going on? Does it always have to just be happy? Do I always just have to be okay after going through so much trauma? And so I just stopped going 6 years ago. I never went back. I tried to go to a few different churches after that. And I didn't even leave out of a place of anger or even disappointment. I was just like, I'm done. If you're not, if you don't remember this horrific thing, this guy was a youth leader for this church. He planted a church through the church we were going to. And you guys don't even remember that he had an affair and got a woman pregnant twice. So you all just aren't paying attention. I'm not significant enough for you guys to remember that. Not really the pastor, but the people who worked there. The pastor and his wife remembered. But, and so I just left and it's all good blood. I say hello if I see them, give hugs, whatever. And they don't, I think they get it at that church. They understand, okay, Jen's doing her own thing. We don't agree with it, but we're not going to question it. But yeah, a lot of people question me in the first place, except my boyfriend. He challenges me a lot, but challenges me a lot.
Your boyfriend challenges everybody a lot, and that's okay.
Everyone a lot. He thrives on confrontation, and I'm terrified of confrontation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a great match.
The best. But so yeah, so in all of that, between my ex-boyfriend, my ex-husband, me leaving the church, my parents and my family are still in the IBLP. They're still trucking along with the Duggars, the Holt family. I was close with them. They're still trying to save those relationships. And that was so hard for me because I was just living in a totally different world than them. My youngest sister is 26 years younger than me. She's 12 and I'm 38. And so when I'm 26, my mom is still doing the quiverful thing, albeit she was a surprise. My youngest sister, she's what? This is nuts. But for me, I was like, this is tough. This should be me having these kids. I should be in this time of life. And she felt that too. She was like, this should be my kids having kids. And I could tell that like around that time, my mom started backing out a little bit. But I pretty much had to drag them out though, be very upfront with them and saying, mom, dad, these people, they're not right. There's something wrong. And I had been saying probably since 2015, when the Duggar story became public, after that, I had been telling my mom and my stepdad, there's more. I feel like this is the tip of the iceberg. You guys need to get my siblings out. And if you guys don't get them out, I will take them out. And it wasn't a threat. It was like, I am their oldest sister. I don't want them to have to go through the same things that I did. Because at the time I had four siblings that were underage that were still at home. One was a newborn. And so like all of these things, I was just like, there's more. And I said that about the Duggars. And even though I'm close with some of the Duggar girls still, I see Jill and I are probably the closest. Just we'll text back and forth. And I went to go see her at one of her book signings a few weeks ago and listened to her book. And she had already talked to me a little bit about what was in her book just to get some perspective, I think, as they were writing it. Because I was there. Like I was physically there for a lot of this stuff that I was one of the kids. Like I was one of the kids when they did their first radio interview, when they did their first television interviews, 14 kids and counting. And as that was happening, I was leaving, but I'm still close with these kids. I babysat them. I grew up with them. It's just a weird contrast. Like I'm leaving, but I'm still close with you. So my mom had a hard time letting go of the friendships that she had made because the women basically raised their kids together. They were like sisters. But it got to the point to where things were so tough with the Duggars. They were just absorbed in their show. And then there was this little posse of people surrounding them that would just do whatever they wanted at their beck and call and didn't care about anybody else. It was tough. It was probably like a 15 to 18 year process of me.
Yeah.
I guess I say that because I was 18 when I started all this and I'm 38 now, but they've been out for about 5 years. So however long that is. But yeah, still, like, even in the past 5 years of all of the things that we've learned, like Bobby Holt and my mom went to high school together. They've known each other forever. And so it's been really difficult for my mom to let go of some of these friendships that she's had for so long, which I can understand that you grow up with these people, you raise kids with these people. But I think after a certain point, she was just like, I can't keep my younger kids in all of this. It's a mess. It's a freaking mess.
Yeah. I think one thing that I have learned throughout this is that anytime that you have something like this, like you have a cult leader, so you have Gothard or you have Dobson
or even Duggar
or Duggar, there's going to be scandals. There's going to be things that happen. It is not what it looks like.
No, it's not.
And I can Gothard.
Oh, just no, go on. That is with Shiny Happy People. I was watching it and I was like, man, they did their research. So there's a lot of people who are like, this can't be true. I can testify. I was there. It is all true. I was in the choir at those events, in the choir with all the navy and white outfits. Physically, I was in the choir in those shots. And I'm just sitting there. Oh my gosh, this is all true. This, all of this is true. And I can't believe they're doing this. That's why I say Ann Duggar, because the only thing in that documentary that shocked me is the fact that Jim Bob would be considered for the next leader of the IBLP. I was shocked. But nobody else was. I was like, they do so much already that I just never crossed my mind that would be something that they would do. And I think it is. And I think it's about the money and not about the ministry. It's my opinion. But
yeah, I don't know a whole lot about the Duggars, because when they became a big deal, like, we couldn't afford cable. We couldn't. There were certain things that we just couldn't have because we were young and married. We got married in 2004. And I remember little things here and there. Gosh, that's back when TLC had a dating story, a wedding story, and then they had a baby story. Right. So yeah, they had those different things. And I remember the documentaries a little bit with the matching outfit, the matching like prairie dresses and stuff. I was younger. I say younger. I was like in my mid-20s. I was having babies. I thought it was weird that they all dressed the same. That's the only thing that I extracted that I thought was strange is that, oh, they all, the mommy and me dressing thing. That felt weird to me. But everything else, they don't believe in birth control. I knew people in my church growing up that didn't believe in birth controls. It wasn't anything that I felt like, hey, alarm bells, this is really strange. It was just like, okay, so they're like really Christian, but I certainly didn't see them. Like, for me growing up, Mormons were the worst. That Mormons and Jehovah's Witness, like, that was that I couldn't be friends with people that were Mormon. I certainly could not be friends with people that were Jehovah's Witness. So as long as they said they were Christian, they were super safe. And that's how I saw it, was like, all right, so they just have a lot of kids and they don't have a creative way of expressing themselves stylistically speaking.
Yeah,
that was it. But yeah, like I said, I was 25 with two babies in my, two babies in my arms.
I mean, you're younger than you. So I was like 17 when all of this started. This all started at the same time that the church was finding out about Josh's issues. So I'm finding out about all this horrible stuff that's happening to these kids that I adore, that I've been babysitting, that I'm with, that I've been with every weekend since I was 11 years old. I've been there for many of their births, like birthdays. And so I'm finding out that these things happened at the same time that their show is airing. And so I actually never watched any of the show until I was an adult, until this year. I never watched any of it because I was like, I cannot rectify this in my mind of, you have all of these things going on in your family. why are you doing this? This is a lot. This is a lot to take on. And in their mind, it was their ministry. And I understand that. If you want to tell the world about whatever, that's probably the best way to do it, is broadcast yourself on TV. But I think that for me, I was there. I was personally there with all of these kids. So I didn't watch it because I lived it. I was there. My family had the matching dresses. The Duggar girls and I had matching dresses. That was just the culture of the group. Yep. Where we all had the same outfits and we thought it was hilarious. Then after I left, I blocked it all out for a little while. I was like, I'm just over it. I'm going to do my own thing. And I don't care about what is going on with all of this. And then as I got older, I started paying attention more because my siblings were still with them. They were still in it. So I had to pay attention and be like, okay, I gotta get these people out. Like, I gotta get my family out. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't, my siblings they're gonna grow up in an abusive situation. And my mom and my stepdad are part of a cult. Like, how do I draw them out? I just had to poke at them. Thankfully, they love me. And my mom is like obsessed with all of her kids. So she will listen even if she doesn't agree with us. And my stepdad and I have had words. But now he's like, these people are freaking nuts. I don't want anything to do with them. I'm like this old man who just wants to work his business. And so, but it took years of me being like, you guys can't be doing this. I don't support this. You can't be doing this. And it wasn't just this big fight or this big transformation that happened. It was my siblings and I, who are older, poking at them saying, we cannot be part of this. If they are around, we're not there. If you talk about them, we're not talking about them. If you're doing this, we're not supporting this. So that means that you are knowingly dividing your family. If you want us to not be divided, you're going to have to get out. That was the only leverage we had.
Were you at a space where you were willing to be no contact? If that's where you needed to go?
They never get that far. Like, my mom and my stepdad. But there were years where I had so much trauma going on that there was just, I just couldn't always be poking at them because I had to take care of my own things. Yeah. So they knew my stance never changed, but I was like, I can't keep exerting this energy. I love you guys. My access to my underage siblings was through them too. So my thing was, is I'm like, in order for me to have relationships and any kind of influence over my siblings, I can't go no contact. I need to know if they're okay, if anybody's messing with them, if they're fine. And so the cool thing is that now my siblings don't even know who the Duggars are. They couldn't pick them out in a crowd. They just know that, like, one of my sisters, oh yeah, I just know that they're weird and they cause a lot of pain to our family. So we don't want anything to do with them. I'm like, yes, gotcha. I mean, it was a process, and it's not like it was like this planned process, but we never let it get to the no contact part because I was like, I want access to my siblings. Like, that was more important to me. So.
Yeah. It's one thing to escape a cult, because that's what we did. You don't just walk away, because when you lose everything. But it's another to do what you did, and you went right back into it and you pulled people out, and that's incredible. And I know that it was a really long journey, so it wasn't just I walked away and then the next day I just went. No, it was a long process, and I can only imagine the intensity and the emotion and everything, because like, you're healing while simultaneously going back into that space and having to be a chameleon, right? Yeah. Having to assimilate yourself into two worlds simultaneously.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine that was a lot.
It was a lot.
And
I think that people think of leaving a cult as like, you're running away from your home in the middle of the night. And some people do that. But there are other ways, and there are other traumas that happen. There were times where, in order for me to see my siblings, I had to go to, I never went back to the church, but they had a little, a meal afterwards, and I would have to go to the meal afterwards and face all of these people that I ran away from and put on a smile and be like, hey, the Jim Bob is like, hey, Jen, good to see you or whatever. And now the freedom that I have from that, like I saw Jim Bob and Michelle this past November at a wedding. And for my own reasons, I didn't want to talk to him. And my boyfriend was with me and they racially profiled him in the parking lot, outwardly, verbally, asked him if he was the parking attendant. And he was just stunned. He actually didn't even know who they were. He introduced himself to them and asked them their names, and they were appalled that he didn't know. He didn't know who they were. And he did a TikTok about it afterwards that got like thousands of comments and views because he has his own TikTok. But like I've lost a bunch of weight and they were like, oh my gosh, Jen, it's so good to see you. You look so great. And I looked in their face and said, I know. I've worked hard. Like I just didn't have any, I didn't have anything to say to them. And it's not that I even am angry at them. I just don't think about them enough at this point to be hateful or angry towards them. But I think that they did do a lot of damage to my family and to a lot of other families. And I just don't want to be associated with people like that. So I will pull whoever wants to get out. I'll pull them out. I'm not scared of these people. I'm not. Anna Duggar came to me at a different wedding asking me, this was very soon after we found out about Josh's Ashley Madison scandal, which also happened soon after my divorce. So all this was happening at the same time. She asked me, how would you have stayed with him? And Josh sprinted over to us to be part of the conversation. And I told them my whole story. I'm like, this is what happens when you cheat on your spouse. I'm like, I'm lucky. I got a fresh start. I don't have a bunch of kids. I'm like, I'm not scared of you. I'm not scared of what, if you're going to come running over like your male influence, like I'm still going to tell my story. So
yeah,
if anybody wants to get out, I'll pull them out. I'm not scared.
I think that the word that I'm choosing in this moment is, now that I am out, I've become disenchanted with all the major actors in this space and the people that used to hold the authority over me, the people that I used to fear. If I don't give this person a good enough representation, a good enough front of who I am, then it's going to get back to me. And somehow, some way, I'm going to deal with the repercussions of that. I just simply don't care anymore. Yeah. Because I'm not enchanted by them anymore. They're nothing to me anymore. If I were to run into my former megachurch pastor who wielded so much power, in fact, this man still wields so much power in the area that I live in because of how many churches he has and who he knows and everything. I just don't care.
Yeah.
Because I'm not part of that anymore. And I don't need him to define who I am.
Or validate you.
Or validate me. Exactly. Yeah. I don't look to that anymore. Yeah. I'm free from narcissistic control. And that is one of the most empowering things. When I'm sitting here and I'm trying to figure out, what is it that I'm going to do? Because I'm out of this cult and I have a degree, but I don't have the resume. There's certain things, right? I can sit here and I can say, yeah, you're like, we'll talk about that. But I can sit here and I can say, I freed myself from narcissistic control. Mm-hmm. I freed myself from a cult.
Yeah.
I survived this upbringing that we're all still trying to make sense of.
Oh, for sure.
But we're all survivors. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we can use when life is really tough. We can say, I know that I can put one foot in front of the other because I did it before and I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
And now we have the honor of being able to stand shoulder to shoulder with everybody. And I've said this before in a lot of movements, in a lot of advocacy spaces, people get to stand on the shoulders of giants. Mm-hmm. And we are the giants that people will stand on the shoulders of.
Yeah.
Because we are the ones that are all coming forward and we're saying, enough is enough.
Yeah.
We're not going to be a part of this. We're not going to continue to run this charade for you. I think it's incredible what you did. So what are you doing now to stop the cycle of trauma, either in, it doesn't have to be all three of these things, but in your personal life, so in your family, so we've already covered that.
Yeah.
In your community, and then I always say globally, because I do meet some people that are like doing global things. What are you doing? And then I will ask my three questions after you answer that.
Try to keep it quick. So I think with my family, I think we're resting right now. My brother is getting married. I'm going to cry because I love this kid, but we're all bawling about my brother getting married because it's like the first since my wedding in 2008. It's the first big happy thing where we are going to drink and we're going to dance our butts off and nobody cares and there's no cult involved. He's just
symbolic.
Yeah, he's just the best guy. And he was
the first one born in it.
One, yeah.
Yeah, he was the one that was initially born in it, right? Yeah.
Me and my sister. So he has a sister who's older than him, who she's still in it halfway. But he's like the first one. He was the strong-willed child that everyone tried to break him. And my mom was like, I don't think we need to break this kid. I think we're just going to let him do his thing. And he's the best guy. And so my families were resting after going through so much trauma here in Northwest Arkansas the past few years with the Duggar trials and all of the people who witnessed in those trials. We knew them personally. We could call them. And then the aftermath that came from that. And then we're just resting. We're chilling. We're having a good time. I'm introducing my mom to music and all these random things. She'll text me and she'll be like, oh my gosh, have you heard this song? 5 or 6 years ago, I took her to her first Meghan Trainor concert and it was a huge deal for her to go to that. So we're just resting. We're having a good time. We're enjoying the company that we have. My boyfriend, we've been together for 5 years and they just all love each other. And then our family's growing. I have my sister-in-law who is coming into the family. And so I think family-wise on a small scale, I still have to remind them, like, we got out. We got out. Mm-hmm. We're good. We love each other. We're together. Our family is together.
Yep.
And we see all these families, these IBLP families around us that are ripped to shreds. The Duggars, half of them aren't talking to each other. The Holt family has some things that came out publicly about them. And then probably 10 other families that we know of. They're all ripped to shreds right now. And I fully believe that these families can rebuild themselves. And I think that they will. They just have to be willing to learn and do the work that it takes to do it. So my family, we're chilling. We're having a good time now because we've done a lot of the work already. But then in my own life, I think that speaking out about this and telling my own story of my own struggles, like, I was bred to be a housewife. That was it. That was my only option to do that and maybe teach music. And now I work for a tech company where I get to travel all over the US and plan these huge events for this company. And I've worked at 2 Fortune 100 companies before this. And that was out of sheer grit and determination to do it.
Yep.
I don't have my college degree. I probably won't get it at this point. But I think that for me, speaking out, and people keep telling me like, oh, do a podcast of your own or do TikTok. And I really don't want to do it. I don't want to keep up, but I do talk a lot on my Instagram. I talk a lot about my conservative story, my divorce story, my weight loss story. I think I'm better at writing than I am videos, but I think just speaking out the best way that I know how and in my own language and not being pressured to do certain things. Like I told you, I was invited to be on Shiny Happy People, and I just decided not to. I wasn't in the right mindset to do it. And there were some things with it that I didn't want to be associated with. And I'm glad that I didn't do it. But if they do another one, I would be down to do it.
Yeah.
Better headspace now. So globally, I have not made it there yet. I had one post on TikTok go viral out of sheer. It wasn't even about this. So like, it was about Black Lives Matter. And that subject is always very popular. So it was just sheer luck that even happened. But
yeah,
globally, I think that if I have something that goes global, then it's meant to be. And if not, I'm okay with it. Because I have enough people in my life that I'm willing to help get out if they want to. And they know where to find me. They know where to find me. I still live in the same town that I've always lived in. So
yeah,
globally, I just haven't made it there yet.
Okay. I'm going to ask you the three questions that I ask everybody. And I call it my lightning round. And that's just because it sounds buzzy and catchy. But in reality, it's going to cause you to think like it does everybody. Favorite book?
Oh, man. So Gabrielle Stone is a writer who she wrote two books about her divorce story. And I have them on my bookshelf right here. And I cannot remember what they're called for the life of me, but I've read both of them twice. So I just got her journal and I'm going to show it to you because it's called Fuck Off, I'm Healing.
I love this.
And it's
I
like
love this.
Questions that you can ask. So anyways, the author is Gabrielle Stone. Both of her books are fantastic. It's about her ex who had an affair and her journey through all of that. Mm-hmm. And she's married now and pregnant because I've been keeping up with her on Instagram. But I was reading her books as I've been writing mine. And I'm like, this is
beautiful.
Crazy. This is crazy. So many women are going through this. Men, but I'm focusing on the female side because that's all I know. But people, so many people are going through these affairs. And oh, man, they're good.
Yeah.
You should read them.
Favorite song? It's like picking a favorite child for me because that's my wheelhouse.
I go through phases.
Right now, what's your favorite song? Not of all time, because that's unrealistic.
Because I have a Jen's playlist on my...
I have a Steph Anytime playlist. That's what it's called. Yeah, it's weird. It's got a lot of stuff. I'm not going to lie. There's a couple Christian songs on there because I just happen to like the... It's like a metamorphosis out of pain. It doesn't even feel Christian-y. So
this is so stupid, but one of my favorite songs right now in the moment, like the past few months, is the Paint the Town Red song by Doja Cat. It's just a good song. It's just like a female empowerment song for me. Mm-hmm. But then there's another song that's actually part gospel, part rap with Nicki Minaj, but it's a beautiful song and I will find it. But if you want to ask your next question, I'll find it for you.
Favorite movie?
The Great Gatsby.
Which one?
The new one with Leo.
That's a good one.
I just like a tragic love story. But other than my current boyfriend, my love stories have been tragic. And when the first time he watched it with me, he's like, why is this your favorite song? It's so sad because he had never seen it.
I think it's really intriguing. I appreciated the original as well. Mm-hmm. So, no, it's really good.
I just only wanted to see the new one. I never saw. And I never even read the book. The song is called I'm Getting Ready by Tasha Cobbs. And it features Nicki Minaj, which seems super random, but it works. And I have probably listened to that song 1,004 times. Like, it's good. You should listen to it. You'll like it.
I'm writing it down. I write down everybody. Now I have a book list recommendation. It's so long. I have come to find something it's true for everybody that I talk to. And everybody that I talk to has this like unquenchable thirst for knowledge. Mm-hmm. So everybody's got this book and this book and and then there's this one. You go into music and now I listen to this. I love asking people these questions because there's so much we couldn't do for so long. And now we can say, my favorite movie is this, or right now my favorite song is this. So I think it's there's something important about asking us that, because that's not something that we were asked before, because it was the BIBLE and that covered both song and book.
Yep. And that was it.
So
book for me.
I stand alone. Word of God. Jenny. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really proud of you, what you've done, not just for yourself, but what you've done for your family is incredible. And it shows a depth of love that I hope other people get to experience in their life.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. This was good.
Yeah, it was super last minute. So thank you.
It really was, but I'm down with it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. You are so welcome. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure that you are kind to yourself and to others. If you are interested in supporting this show, please click the link at the bottom to my Patreon. These shows take a lot of time and resources, and any support is appreciated. If you are interested in being a guest, please email the show at focusonyourownfamilypodcast@gmail.com. Inside of the show notes, you will find the links to mine and the guests' socials. Please give us a follow. We look forward to talking with you and connecting with you.